It's time to head south with the Fanta from Down Under.
The Fanta. From Down Under.
Do. Or do not. There is no try.
G'day, mate. How you going?
Here is your host, Adam O'Brien.
Welcome to another episode of the one, the only Fanta from Down Under, brought to you by Fanta Tracks Radio. Joining us here for episode number 38 of the show is, of course, our dear pal Marty, all the way from the UK, here to chat some Star Wars. So how do you contact Fanta Tracks Radio? How do you find this show and many others like it on that network? How do you subscribe to Fanta Tracks Radio? Well, it's easy. You just dial up www.fanthatracks.com on the old web. That's right, like the old phones of old, the internet is the new platform. And that's where you will find us, Fanta Tracks, Star Wars news in a single file. You'll find this show, The Fanta from Down Under, there giving you all the Star Wars news from Australia. And of course, everything around there when it comes to Star Wars fandom. You can find me, the host, Adam O'Brien, on at The Lethal Mullet on both Twitter and Instagram, where I chat about all sorts of Star Wars fandom and fun. We'll catch you out there on the web.
And here's Marty Wool.
All right, Woody here on Fanta.
There's no real name on the figures too. If you do get the vintage figure that's out there, it just says Knight of Ren.
Yeah.
That's all it says. But it damn well looks
just keeping it as vague as they can do.
Yeah, and I think that's it. You don't need to know who these guys are. But I can tell you one thing. Marvel have released a little preview of what's coming up very, very soon. It's a Kylo Ren comic to tell the early days of how Ben turned to the dark side. And we see a much younger Luke, about probably in his late 40s, early 50s, I'd say. And this is when Ben is probably 14, 15, just before he turns. And we get to see them fight the Knights of Ren with, here's the drum roll, folks, are you ready? With another Force-sensitive. Oh, hello.
Who is this other Force-sensitive?
Well, we don't know, but he's got a red lightsaber.
Oh, mate, this is all getting good.
So that's...
Like I said, those Marvel comics are normally spot on as well. I've been very impressed with those.
Some of them have been really good. The one I liked was the last Padawan, which was the one about the early years of Kanan Jarrus from Rebels. So when he was apprenticed to Mace Windu's apprentice. So there you go. There's a little bit of bloodline there. Here's where I come unstuck with the new canon. I do like what they've done, but they disregarded everything OT. You could easily have embraced all of the lore that was in that now as Legends pre-original trilogy, because to me, all of that stuff added up. Even the Kenobi book, which was one set where it's literally when Kenobi first gets there to look after Luke. And it's a big Western.
I'm with you there. The loss of not choosing to keep all that history set up in the books is absolutely crazy to me. I mean, it was history, now it's not history. It was canon, now it's not canon.
Yeah.
I wondered where we were going to stand. I thought they were going to keep it for a while, and then no, it's all out the window.
Yeah, I do wonder whether some of it comes into rights and stuff like that, you know, when it comes to the keeping of certain, you know, I just think it was easier for them to have a fresh start is what they probably, you know, all come down to. It's much easier to just go, right, we're going to twist it the way we need to make it in line with the bigger picture, which is all well and fun. I still think, personally, it would have been better to keep part of it and then jettison what they obviously would have conflicted with the stories they were telling. But
yeah.
Is it of the same quality? No.
Going through. Spent a little time going through it all, picking out what they wanted to, what they didn't. Would have been so much better, as you say.
Yeah, 100%. Thing is, there's some really, really good books. I mean, I'm about to do a massive read-through of, pretty much on audiobook, because I love the quality of audiobooks from Del Rey. It's just spot on through Audible. Dotcom, folks. Go and check that out. If you haven't got the app, download it. I'm pretty sure you get a free book with your first download of that stuff. So go and check it out. But the work that they do on these books is just spot on. But to be honest, out of the new ones, there's only been a handful that I've really enjoyed. But in the old days, you pick up one of these great books and you knew you had an adventure on your hands, a real deep, rollicking adventure. We just don't seem to have that in these books now.
No, it's crazy stuff, mate. I do like, though, just picking up, occasionally you'll get the history. I mean, I haven't read all of them, but you'll pick up and you'll get some of them. Just history's just being given there to you straight away. It's fantastic stuff. Like, Skywalker married with a child.
All these ones. Now this is the second book. I'm going to dust it off. It hasn't been picked up in a while. This is a guide to the Star Wars universe by Bill Slavazek, who went on to do a lot of the role playing games. I don't know if he did West End games. I'm pretty sure he did. Anyway, but definitely the D20, all that sort of stuff. But this is great. I mean, this is literally an encyclopedia from back in the 90s, and it's got everything. All the Ralph McQuarrie sketches and Joe Johnston sketches are in this. But it's got all your, who's Ponda Baba? Well, he's an Aquilish pirate and smuggler. He kept company with Dr. Ivazan the Thug, also known as Rufu or Dr. Cornelius. And in the Mos Eisley Cantina, a drunken barber shoved Luke Skywalker and subsequently lost his arm to Ben Kenobi.
Oh, excellent stuff.
Great book. I mean, they're a lot of fun. That looks fantastic. A lot of fun. I've got all the editions of this too. There's been about three or four editions, and this was the one where, this one came out in early 2000s because this was revised when Phantom Menace came out.
Oh, fantastic stuff, mate. No, I've been intrigued by the Ken Napsok book recently.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's been one of the sort of video guys that I've really enjoyed for lots of Jedi stuff. And his book kind of intrigues me at the moment. I may end up getting a hold of that.
There's some really great ones out there. The other one I picked up recently was, if I've still got it here, this was one by Kevin J. Anderson, and it is Darksaber. He did a trilogy before this, of course, the Jedi Academy trilogy, and he did a lot of those little anthology books, but this is his strongest Star Wars book. And in a nutshell, it's the trilogy of them, or the trio, sorry, back together on a rollicking adventure. It basically has, reconstruction of the original Death Star super laser, which becomes the Darksaber in this. And of course you got Pelion in this from the Timothy Zahn books, who's a great character. And you got Durga the Hutt. You've got, it's just great. It's a fantastic read. These were a lot of fun. I mean, you picked it up and you could smash them in one night because they're not exactly, door stops.
No, they keep you dragging on as well. You'll do one chapter and think, oh, I'll just do another chapter. I'll just do another chapter. By the time you know it, you've read half a book.
Oh, without a doubt. But yeah, I don't care what anyone says. At the end of the day, these were, books that you paid hard earned dollar for. And you got a bloody good book out of them. And they were written really well. Whoever was doing them at the time really knew, how to get going. And look, not to say the new ones are bad. It's just, I think it's more a case of giving the freedom for a writer to just go nuts.
Yeah. It would have been nice if they were taken a little more seriously than really in the film world.
Oh, I think so too. Now, folks, obviously the trailer's just dropped for The Rise of Skywalker. And it's a little bit more revealing. We get some little bit stills here and there. We have a little bit of a cackle from the old man, 100-year-old Palpatine in there. And of course we got, looks like a new planet, or is it Endor? We're not sure, where we see a turret and turbo laser from the Death Star and wreckage as well in this.
It's the floating iceberg in the sky. Is the one that gets me. Is that Bespin just frozen over?
Well, could be, but what's really interesting about it is they've actually released, thanks to Galaxy's Edge, what this is. It's actually one of the other moons of the planet of Endor, because there again, Endor isn't really Endor. It is the forest moon of Endor.
Yeah.
This is an ocean moon of Endor called Keth Burr.
I thought, are we going Caravan of Courage here? Are we going to go explore
Please. And I guarantee you, that's one film we need to see on the Disney streaming service. Is, Battle for Endor, maybe. But Caravan of Courage, definitely. And Mace Tawani himself, Eric Waugh, if you're listening, pal, Here's to you, pal. We're giving you the cheers. Live cheers right over here. The virtual cheers. So there you go. Bloody champion and good pal of the show. But yeah, no, look, it's interesting. The footage looks really, really good. I like the fact that we're seeing a bit of everybody in this.
I'll tell you what I enjoyed, mate. It gives you a feel of what's to come rather than actually explaining anything of what's to come. It just gives you that feeling, and it's what Star Wars has always been about for me ever since you was a little kid and went to see it. It's the feeling that Star Wars gives you. If you can hit that, I think you're on a money winner.
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, this wraps up obviously this year, and, you know, we'll have the wake of that early next year. But what's interesting is we're heading into a year where there's no Star Wars movie. There's not going to be one for a couple of years. But this bad boy, this big fella we call Dune, is finally getting its comeuppance. This is your doorstopper. This is the big boy. You know, there's been that many films, that many books that have ripped it off. I mean, even Frank Herbert thought that Star Wars had ripped him off big time. But the trade's already talking about how Warner Brothers are now trying to backtrack a little and try to at least have some openings in and around Dune in December next year, just in case it goes belly up like Blade Runner 2049. A critical darling, but didn't make money.
It's always the worry, though, with Dune. It's a worry straight away, and you've got Villeneuve involved, which means it's going to be beautiful, but it's got that sort of threat of not making a lot of cash.
Oh, 100%. Look, Denis Villeneuve, you know, he's never failed. I mean, maybe he didn't make enough money, obviously, on 2049, but this film...
He makes beautiful things.
Oh, he does. But this film, I do believe, is not as expensive as 2049. So it's got a slightly smaller budget, not by much.
I don't see it being a great deal less. I mean, the things that you've got to do in it.
Oh, yeah.
That's cash.
But one of the things is, this is a film split into two. So the book's that big. They didn't want to do a trilogy, but he said, look, I can do two. And it's how Ridley Scott was going to attack Dune years ago when Ridley Scott, would you like to do the movie? You know, and Ridley's like, am I?
Scott.
Hey, the governor will do it for you. You know, and of course, you know, he went on to do Blade Runner instead. But his take on Dune was a very interesting one, a little bit more realistic. It was going to be based off the Battle of Algiers, which is a film which is a bit more surreal in some parts, but also very grounded too. So, again, it was going to be the attacking of the guerrilla style of the Fremen versus this big conglomerate of the Harkonnen. Interesting to see how Denny attacks that. At the end of the day, he says this is adult Star Wars, and I think we're going to see a film that might put Disney on a little bit of alarm, because if this takes off, what's coming out before it is going to be an eye-opener too, which is called Sisterhood of Dune, a TV show streaming on the Warner Brothers streaming service in October next year.
Whoa. Really?
Yeah. So
now I know I hear a lot of stuff, but I didn't hear about that. That's fantastic.
So we're looking at what is really the basis for the Jedi, which is the Bene Gesserit, which were a group of women in the franchise of Dune, who basically have a school. So this is there's the Sisterhood. There's obviously the Sword Masters of Ginaz, which are basically sword masters, as it is. We have the Mentats, which are the human computers. So because computers are banned after the Machine Revolt. So that's why you get to see a bit of a more medieval-style future in the Dune series. So it's actually humans that are the computers, called Mentats. So you got those, and then you got the Spacing Guild, which are these very, very secretive and... again, their navigators have never been seen by humans before, but they're mutated creatures thanks to Spice, who can actually see the way through space. So when they space fold, these guys are the pilots. They take the ships to where they need to go, and they'll do it just like an a hyperdrive would, but it's done so accurately, it's instantaneous. There's no a space fold, it's like literally done, you're over there. But
you are selling this to me.
Yeah, well, once you know Dune's really easy. Like, it's a dense universe. There's no aliens in Dune, but there's a lot going on. It's very political. But one of the interesting things about it is the Bene Gesserit were, without a doubt, one of many influences on the Jedi structure. The other was the Lensman of the Doc was a Dockie Smith series of novels. Now, the Lensmen had basically a power where they would basically focus all their energies through, and this energy would give them telekinesis, that would give them kinetic powers and stuff like that. Basically, it influenced both the Jedi and the Green Lantern in DC. Same thing. And it's also an influence on the series Babylon 5 as well. So George eventually had the Kyber crystals as something he was focusing through. It was literally a straight lift from the Lensman series. And then when he...
Yeah, instead of a left, you've got a crystal and you're focusing the force.
That's right. That eventually Gary Kurtz came in at the last second there in the scripts, and he said, George, you can't do that. Like, yeah, you know, make it more a religion. And that's where they changed it more in this force that's based on, Tai Chi and Aikido sort of energy, mythology or theology, if you like. But what's interesting about it is Dune with the Bene Gesserit, their whole scheme is to make the Chosen One. So basically it's their version of making Anakin, if you like. So their breeding program is that they're constantly having kids. These girls are, you know, to all different fathers and stuff like that. To breed towards.
Yeah, just to aim for getting the one, the chosen one.
The chosen one, that's right. And he's called the Kwisatz Haderach. Pretty freaky title, but that's what he is. But it's basically, he is the chosen one. He is the Luke, or in this case, the Anakin. But of course they don't play by the rules in the book. And what happens is, instead of giving birth to a daughter who's going to marry, the next in line, they gave birth to Paul.
Yeah.
And Paul is not what they were after. He's something else. So yeah, that's half the thing, but the sisterhood will show all the scheming. It's going to be very heavily, Game of Thrones like, without a doubt. But I think what you're going to see is a lot of the background, the build up. This will really set the pace for Dune, the movie, without a doubt.
Mate, you've sold that to me more than anything that I've seen so far. Good on you. They should employ you.
Well, they should. I mean, look, the amount of stuff that Kevin J. Anderson's done for us in the past, I'm happy to do it.
Makes fantastic stuff. You're really hooking me in.
That's great. And folks, if you haven't read Dune, I mean, why haven't you? I mean, it's a dense story. And once you read it once, it's one of those novels where you, cause the way that it's designed, Frank really designed a novel that, particularly towards the end of the story, you get such a gains of what's happening. All the different, like, so you see the Harkonnen's point of view, you see, the Atreides, you see the Fremen, you get to start to see some of what the Bene Gesserit do. So everyone's scheming. There's not really one bad guy. There's like a whole heap. Then there's not just one good guy. There's all these different plans within plans. And when the ending comes, it comes so quickly you don't realise it. That's how smart it is.
That's fantastic. Do you think they'll bring Sting back?
Well, I saw an interview with him recently where Sting was talking about, he said, the one thing that keeps drawing back is that bloody piece of underwear he had to wear.
It's just, the main thing I always, just him and Carl McLachlan. Straight.
But what else is really interesting, folks, is, you know, at the end of the day, we've got all these great, you go back to the film itself. The Lynch film is what it is. It's a piece of, time is where it was. Was Lynch the right person for Dune? Hell no, of course not. And he'd be the first one to say it. But I think the film itself is such a cornerstone or kernel of time that it really gave us, Kyle MacLachlan, who was a Dune fan before he got into it. He loved those. He said, you know, I got into it because, you know, they told me they were making it. And when he heard that it was Dune, he's like, hell yes, I'll do that. Because he'd read the Dune Messiah and Children of Dune. So he knew that series. So to get into that was something for him, but they've done that. And then in 2000, they released the miniseries with William Hurt, which was at the time on VHS quite a big thing. Like, I don't think it holds up quite as well on DVD and Blu-ray. You can start to see the sets, just how much wasn't really on screen. It was more tapestries.
Could come with a little more budget.
A little more budget might have just got it there. But I have to say, Children of Dune was done quite well. I really, really enjoyed it. And the thing is, it pays off because you've still got most of the cast, pretty much 75% of the cast of that original miniseries came back 3 years later to do it. And, P.H. Moriarty, who's just, personally, I think fantastic as Gurney Halleck, far better than Patrick Stewart. I am here for the Atreides fighting the army. Engage. right, make me some Earl Grey tea. You know, like,
and yet you challenge Patrick Stewart. Oh, he's a brave man. Brave move.
I've got to say, he was a bit much. I watched, I love Patrick Stewart, but I remember seeing him at an awards thing where he was paying out James Corden, who I'm not a big fan of. He's basically, you know, you don't just show your tummy to the rest of the TV or whatever it was. I'm like, come on, man, you can't do that to me. You know? And then it became a running gag. The two of them eventually made up and became, I think it was, you know, good pals later, doing gags on his own show. I love that they're good sports, even when they get a bit frustrated with each other, these stars sometimes. And God, they're funny.
Because you've got to figure Patrick Stewart's got to be a good sport. I mean, all the Ted stuff and everything, fantastic.
Oh, they get right into it. But yeah, getting back to Star Wars, folks. Yeah, there's trailers out there. You're getting that, but in about 2 or 3 weeks, you get Mandalorian. Now, hell, I tell you what, this looked good.
I'll tell you what, mate. Mandalorian looks excellent. Directors they brought in, the actors they brought in. When you look at it, I mean, it looks like a movie in every single episode.
Oh, does it ever? Yeah,
it looks stunning.
I'm really impressed with everything about it. I mean, if I was to see something live action, this is what I want to see as a TV series. I mean, I look back on what George was going to do with that rumored underworld thing he was putting together, which was set between, you know, the third and fourth film. I'm like, yeah. Godfather with Hutts. I mean, who's the characters you're rooting for in this? Because, you know, no matter what
you're not going to root for the Hutts ever.
No, hell no. And I think that's where George loses a little bit the flavour of when it comes down to making characters that we're going to get into. You know, and we saw that in the Clone Wars. I mean, eventually you got to know some of the characters.
That always look great.
Oh, yeah.
Bounty Hunters, they always look amazing. And whatever they do with them, you know, that's one of the things that I've liked about the Mandalorian clips. Mm-hmm. Showing some of the Bounty Hunters look fantastic again.
And it works really well. I love them.
You know, and Gina Carano. Oh.
And she can fight, which is really, really good. You know, she holds her own. And she was great in the Fast and Furious films too. I think she was in, what's the sixth film? No. She's in, I think, the sixth film when they go to the UK.
Yeah. When you see her drop down with the Brazilian girl.
Yeah.
Fantastic in that. And in Deadpool as well. She's great in that as well as Angel. Angel Dust.
Yes, I mean, look, they're really quite well put together with these films and these TV shows. Now, the other one is, of course, Kenobi. We're just hearing that Joel Edgerton will be coming back to play Owen Lars.
Kitty, please give him a fight scene after Warrior. Please.
Oh yeah. And that's all we have time for tonight here on the Fantha from Down Under. We'll catch you next week on Fantha Tracks Radio.